Well, last week on this program we worried about lead and told of worms so full of it that birds who eat the worms fall dead from the sky. That's in America. This time we're worried about mercury, particularly the quicksilver we still have in our teeth as fillings.
10% of the world's mercury stores are actually bound up in humans walking around the planet, and all their body excretions creates a massive amount of mercury into the environment. Plus, when they get cremated or buried, ultimately all mercury placed into a human ends up in the environment. Then the practice of putting it into the tooth, dental offices are definitely a major contributing factor in the pollution of mercury in our waterways. Currently in Australia, only one state, and I think Canberra, have installed certain equipment to capture the mercury before it enters the wastewater. It's a massive amount and it needs to stop.
Dr. Lisa Matrist is a dentist working in Melbourne. She's director of Australians for a Mercury-Free Dentistry. So, after all these years using it, is amalgam really a problem?
Most people aren't aware that the silver fillings that have been put into their mouths are actually composed of 50% elemental mercury. And currently, there's global concern about the level of mercury that we are all absorbing. And dentistry is definitely one of the sectors that is being looked at in our current United Nations Environmental Programme Treaty. There's a treaty called the Minamata Treaty, which is dealing with the mercury pollution, and dental amalgam is listed as one of the products to be discussed and hopefully phased out.
Now, it's been in our heads and our teeth for so long. Many of us have had it for years. Has it been quietly leaking out into our bodies?
That's right. The problem with the mercury component of the amalgam filling is that it's very easily vaporized. In fact, the manufacturer says that it shouldn't be stored above 25 degrees Celsius because of the element vaporizing. And yet, anybody can tell you that our own body temperature is 37 degrees. So we do constantly have a seepage of this mercury into our bodies. And another way that mercury gets absorbed is also ingestion. These fillings swell because of their metallic content, and you actually chew it off. And the World Health Organization said in 1991 that the greatest dietary source of mercury for anybody was actually coming from their dental amalgams, not actually from fish.
How do we know that it actually is doing something to your body that's harmful?
The manufacturer states that it can cause chronic mercurialism, and some of those symptoms are things like tremors. It's definitely very toxic to the kidneys. And also the unique feature of mercury is that it does cross the placental barrier directly into the developing baby. So there have been studies done that correlate the concentration of mercury in umbilical cord blood with the number of dental amalgams from the mother. Other ways of assessing the level of mercury in your body is a hair tissue mineral analysis, and that's recognised for an exposure for a 3-to-month period previously. Blood tests for mercury will show acute exposure. But I was at a medical conference, Robin, and the doctor was saying that he is now picking up a lot of mercury in people's blood. And that means that these people are so full of mercury contamination that they can't deal with it anymore. It's no longer being absorbed into the fatty tissues. It's now circulating throughout the blood system.
Could that source, however, include environmental mercury, which is abundant in Australia?
That's right. The environmental mercury is the organic form, the methyl mercury. Another unique feature of elemental or inorganic mercury is that once it enters the environment, it is transformed by microorganisms into the more toxic version. And methyl mercury primarily comes through the food chain by our fish. But we also convert within our own bodies elemental mercury into methyl mercury. And this is done by our own microorganisms.
Is there a substitute that's commonly accepted?
Absolutely. And this is one of the things that I'm advocating to our government. Mercury-free dental alternatives definitely do exist. Even our own amalgam manufacturer here in Melbourne has a whole range of mercury-free alternatives. I haven't used dental amalgam in 24 years in clinical practice, and there isn't any clinical situation that I'm presented with where I wish, gee, I wish I had an amalgam that I could fix this with. It just doesn't happen. There's also so many countries in the world now that have already phased it out a long time ago. So how are the dentists operating if they don't have these alternatives? I also know in the US, 7 years ago, mercury-free alternatives became more popular than dental amalgam. So the technology is there and is definitely being used, and it's cost effective and it is durable.
So why don't your colleagues all use it?
Tradition, I would think. In Australia, it is taught within the universities. I know in Switzerland, they haven't taught how to place an amalgam filling in 13 years. So you're taught a certain way of dealing with situations. I also know that as an Australian dentist, when I review my Australian dental literature, there seems to be a strong bias and protection of this amalgam product. And this is one of the things I am also advocating, that we have dental reform here in Australia. It's not just the patients we have to protect, but the Australian dental workers are being occupationally exposed to this noxious product. And 30 years since I was a dental student, nothing has changed in the curriculum to change this practice.
But let's get it clear. Is the resistance because people say there's no problem, or because they just couldn't be bothered doing anything much about it because it's too difficult?
It's not a difficult thing to switch and change. To become a dentist here in Australia, you have to show competency in being able to use mercury-free alternatives, especially in front teeth. You just don't see the practice of putting these silver, grey, ugly things in front teeth.
Okay, so what's going to happen next? Are you going to continue on a sort of lone quest, or will there be a tipping point?
I believe we definitely are at a tipping point. I'm seeing it internationally. When I participate at the United Nations, there are many countries ready to see the phase out of this poisonous, polluting product. Europe is putting forward a position of 2018, and I know all of the African countries, the Arab countries, Brazil, many Asian countries are ready for the phase out, so they're happy to embrace these mercury-free alternatives.
How many of your colleagues disagree with you?
On the environmental issue, none. Our Australian Dental Association does have a policy that they are recommending dentists to install mercury separators so they can be environmentally responsible.
What about treatment?
There seems to be little regard for the National Health and Medical Research Council guideline of 1998, where dental amalgam shouldn't be used in pregnant women, people with kidney disease, and children. I know for a fact that this practice is still going on at our teaching institutions, and I know in the school dental service, dental amalgam is being used for restoring decayed teeth in these children.
And what's not properly recognised, according to my own dentist, is how the practitioners themselves, the dentists and nurses, may be at risk from exposure. But mercury is being steadily phased out. Dr. Lisa Matrist is Director of Australians for Mercury-Free Dentistry.